well this time around. It may not be the trial of the century. Then again, it could be again. We're talking about the trial of Rick Tavish and Sandy Murphy in Las Vegas for the murder of Ted Binion. On the line, we have Kathy Scott. Kathy, of course, is a great criminal reporter, and she writes books about true crime. In fact, she has a book about the Binion case called Death in the Desert, the Ted Binion Homicide. And Kathy also is a stringer for the New York Times and a columnist for the Las Vegas City Life. Kathy, welcome to the show. Well, Kathy Scott, the retrial is here.
Yes, it is.
And you were in court yesterday, and they had all, what did they have, 14 motions or something like that?
Yeah, there were quite a few motions. Some of it was just laundry, getting rid of, it was basically the final motions and preparing for court, and they got into transportation from the prison for Rick Tavish to logistics, how long they expect the jury selection to take, how long, Judge Bonaventure thinks the trial would take, how many hours a day he's going to keep it in session, that sort of thing.
Now, you told me that they promised the judge that they would get the jury selected within a day and a half or so, huh?
Well, the judge asked if they thought they could get it done in a day to a day and a half, a day and a half to 2 days, and both sides agreed, the prosecution and the defense. However, Tony Serra wasn't in court. His co-counsel were there, but I believe historically, Serra on his cases, especially a murder case, although this isn't capital, but it is murder, typically he takes a little bit longer. But we'll see how it goes. The judge said he will be going till 5:30 every day, and that's a big difference between 4 and 5:30. Those are very long days.
It's going to be, what, from 9 o'clock in the morning?
Last 8:30.
8:30, wow.
So that is a lot.
Yeah, 8:30 is 5:30, and I wrote it down. I don't have my notebook in front of me, but I know the 5:30 was accurate. And last time, we would go over until 5, sometimes a little bit after, but there were days when he would shut down at 4, so he wants this to be a four or five week trial. He always says, it's not because of him. He wants it for the jury, but, he doesn't want jury selection to take more than 2 days. It's such an important thing. I mean, this is a murder trial. The defendants are up for murder. It's such an important thing that if one of the sides wanted more time, I'm sure Bonaventure would bring it.
Yeah, usually most laymen don't think about it, but that jury selection is a key thing to any trial.
Right, and it's interesting that Bonaventure put the time, sort of a time limit on it from the outset, which he did last well, and certainly nobody wants to rush through jury selection. Three jurors were already, that came out yesterday too, three jurors had requested because of hardship if they could be removed. I believe there's a pool of something like 120 right now. Could be a little bit more. Been selected and they'll be in court, I think, part of the day on Monday. The other half the rest of the day.
He wants to, hurry this trial along. At the same time, he gave the prosecution the right to call a lot of witnesses about their relationship. Tavish and Murphy, didn't he?
Yes, I find it curious that he wants to hurry along the trial before it's even started. And, I mean, you don't really, you'll hear a judge say, I expect it to take this much time, but you don't usually hear him say, I want you to take this much time. I mean, look at the Kobe Bryant trial. When it was underway, I don't believe a judge put a limit on that. And I think the selection on that jury for just a rape allegation, I think that selection took a while. And of course, in the Scott Peterson case, how long did it take?
Well, quite a long time.
Yeah, and this judge is very patient and is allowing each side to take as much time as they like. And what was it, 3 weeks of the prosecution presenting their side? So two people's lives are hanging in the balance, and I think that's an important thing.
Did they give any indication in court how long the prosecution case will last this time?
No, you know, they, as the case gets underway, I would imagine, you know, by looking at the witnesses, and then the judge will start asking questions, how long do you think it'll take for each witness underway? That's when we'll have a feel for it. I can't imagine there are going to be as many witnesses as last time. Plus, some of the evidence has been thrown out, and I would think there's less of a case to present this time for the prosecution.
Now, what was this about? The defense won something about being able to get a receipt entered into evidence. Something about from a restaurant.
Oh, yeah, the judge started yelling actually at one point, but the time of death, the time of Ted Binion's death is very important. And Sandy and Rick and an attorney friend of theirs were out to lunch at the Tejas, a Mexican restaurant here, kind of a high end. And Rick was there longer, and there are witnesses who have told the defense team that they saw him there over a longer period of time when what the prosecution has stated. So what the defense team wants, not unreasonably, they want receipts showing, you know, the people they have. There are five or six people, and they want to see when those people paid their bills and left, so that they can, you know, get that window for the different people who said they saw him and then stagger it over a period of time.
Now, the judge allowed that, right?
They allowed it. They asked for a full day's receipts, and that's when he hit the ceiling and said, you want credit card copies of, you know, from people? And they said, no, that isn't what we want. We just wanted the receipts to go through. And he says, well, how about if you do it opposite? You provide the names, and they'll provide the receipts. And the attorney for the restaurant was there, and the judge granted it. He also granted, gave them the page for that day's reservations, that lunch period of time. You know, lunch is staggered every 3 or 4 hours. They get the reservation list, and they also get the schedule of employees for the week, which fell into that day on September 17th. It's interesting they got that. That was a big deal.
Right. And interesting that Judge Bonaventure's manner hasn't changed much, evidently. He still is histrionic. Is that the term?
Sometimes in other cases he's you know, presiding over. And he, you know, it's what he does. It's theatrics, and that's what he does. I mean, there was a person in the courtroom who, I believe, is on one of the court TV boards, and her husband or friend or whoever it was with her, and every time the judge would say something that was not in favor of the defense, he would just guffaw and laugh, and I thought, my God, you know. It is what it is. It's a courtroom. It's very serious. It's certainly not for entertainment value, I don't think. But I don't know that everyone understands that this trial is not being put on for their entertainment value. Two people's lives are in balance, and it's a court of law.
Well, what's your sense this time around? Do you think it'll be a fair shake, or can you tell?
Well, with Tony Sarah there, and now also what came out yesterday that's very important, is that Alan Dershowitz will be appearing in court on a limited basis to argue, you know, the defense's side for Sandy Murphy. So he'll be joining in with Michael Cristalli. I think with the powerhouses of Dershowitz and Sarah, these guys know what they're doing. They've got some pretty high-profile defendants off. And I think with the evidence, neither one of them would have taken it if they didn't feel they've got a fair shot at it. I really do. I think that they've got a fair shot at getting a better trial. I think a lot of the smoke and mirrors that came in last time will also come in, but I think they're, you know, the Sarah's going to throw a fit. He's not going to allow inappropriate things. And I'll give you an example. Last time in the trial, which I sat through, the prosecutors continued constantly to call Sandy and Rick killers. Over and over, killers and murderers.
And this is when they were just accused and not convicted, right?
Convicted. Now they're back where they were. They're innocent until proven guilty. And they did, the judge made a stipulation at the request of Tony Sarah that they not use that kind of language in front of reporters who will turn around and reprint it, and in front of the jury. That is prejudicial. And if they do it, Sarah said he would call for a mistrial. So I don't think they're going to do it. I mean, this is a man who knows his way around the legal system, and he's not going to put up with nonsense.
Interestingly enough, Sandy Murphy was not in court, huh?
Yeah, it's a little curious. I think it's probably her maturity level that, you know, she's facing murder, you know, the fight of her life on Monday. And she was in California with her parents, is what her attorney said, and they excused her, the judge excused her, but, you know, you didn't see Martha Stewart missing any hearings.
No.
She was at every single one, I think, even the ones she didn't need to be at. You know, it's very important to be there. You know, Rick Tavish, on the other hand, is very serious about his case and goes to the law library every day. That's how he spends his days. And he's actually helping research and that sort of thing.
Now, talking about Tavish, a lot of people thought he'd probably be out on parole by now.
Well, it's because he was given parole on a couple of things. He was granted parole, but he still has some time to serve on one of the other convictions. So as soon as that is up, and I believe that's around March, if he isn't convicted of murder, then he should get out after the first of the year on the other counts.
The thing about Dershowitz was a surprise. A lot of people pretty well counted him out.
Knew he was in.
Oh, did you?
I've known it for a while. And it was just a matter of, I heard it from actually a bailiff a few months ago that Dershowitz was back on the team. He's been waiting in the wings for a long time. But, you know, he's the one who prepared the appellate case, and he's the one who argued it at the Nevada Supreme Court. And so he knows a lot of the issues, and there's apparently certain points that he will be arguing. They're going to bring him in for certain things. He's good, and he wouldn't do it if he didn't think Sandy was innocent.
Anna Ling, one of the attorneys, is she a local attorney?
She's a co-counsel with Tony Sarah.
Okay, so she's out of California as well.
What is Sarah's last name?
Uh-huh.
There's another female. Anna is very good, very, very good attorney.
Yeah, I've heard that about her, but she's not, I thought I'd ask.
She's no nonsense. She's not shy. She stands up when she needs to be. The thing that is striking, that I have found extremely striking with... Well, it was both with DeGaron when he was there and Tony Sarah. They are extremely formal in a courtroom and are extremely respectful, and they're professional, and I think they bring a certain air to it. I mean, they're confident. They know what they're doing. They're not cocky by any means. And Tony will, you know, talk up a storm and laugh and joke with the prosecutors before the whole thing starts. I mean, he truly is a gentleman, and he believes in his client's innocence, but he knows what he's doing. And I think that's what, you know, Las Vegas tends to be a little casual. You see the same attorneys coming in and out. Things happen that don't necessarily happen in other courtrooms. And I think that they're going to keep this thing, you know, where it should be.
Well, it's interesting. I thought it was a good argument about the relationship. You know, I think Anna Ling at one time was quoted in one of the articles as saying it's not a divorce case.
Well,
yeah, right. But I guess
Rick were involved. I mean, she was living with a drug addict and alcoholic, and you know, there's no such thing as the prosecution brought up at one of the hearings, and was just the whole room started laughing. It was so absurd that you know, Ted Binion was a sophisticated drug user. Well, how sophisticated can you be when you're buying it off the street? I mean, you don't know what you're getting. And also, if you look at his body, his body had taken its toll from the abuse from 1985 on with drugs, and your body can only do
it. Well, were they able to stipulate that, or is that going to come out in court?
They'll just nail him on it. I mean,
uh-huh.
Say he was a sophisticated drug user when he's buying street drugs. You know what you're getting.
Yeah, I understand that, and that's kind of a strange argument for the DA to be arguing to begin with. They're supposed to be.
So, they, you know, people pull that up as evidence, but my God, that's certainly, if you look at the autopsy photos in his body, he was in horrible shape. And people said he didn't look good you know, his skin was blotchy. The man was not healthy, and he was doing a tremendous amount of drugs. He was spiraling. He was really spiraling.
Well, you know, I was thinking more in terms of the relationship issue. Are they going to bring witnesses up? Are they going to be able to bring witnesses up, saying, "Oh, we saw them go into this hotel," or so on?
I think they're going to object. That was part of the thing yesterday, the relationship. But they're going to object if they try to say these people that was their motive. I mean, they were having an affair, with or without him. I mean, you know what I mean? She was going out with Rick, but it was very, very difficult to live with him. You know, it happens. I mean, people have affairs. There's no law against
that. Yeah, right. And I'm certainly not condemning anybody about it. I'm just wondering about the prejudicial effect on jurors.
But they brought up yesterday trying to get that out, but the judge said, yes, they can bring it out. But I think if they overdo it, and I think they did, what happened was the judge asked the prosecution to go easy, but they'll if they overdo it, they absolutely are going to object to it, because like Anna said, they're not on trial for you know, having an affair. It's not a divorce case. Lots of people get involved with other people, especially, you know, she was in a bad situation with him. She was young, you know, and that's her maturity level again coming in. You know, she's much younger than her years, I think, as far as maturity goes, Scandia. Certainly not to the extent, and they made, they're trying to make that as a motive, you know. I mean, you know, Ted took too many drugs and he died, so it's going to be interesting how that plays out.
Well, how about this time around with the press? I'm getting a feeling from a long distance that, you know, Sandy and Tavish, both of them are actually getting a little better shake this time around.
Well, yes, as far as the media goes,
that's what I'm talking about.
When a case is overturned by the Supreme Court, and it was not a technicality. This case was not turned over on a technicality. It was turned over because the Supreme Court jurist said they didn't get, due process. Their rights were violated, and so they're getting another trial based on that. And so I think the media, because of that, have looked at it differently. I, of course, have tried to write both sides, and you know, whereas before, I think with the media, it was so slanted, it was almost pitiful coming out of the prosecution's office. It was so damning, and it was amazing that no one asked for a gag order. And this time around, I think if the sentiment, you know, if they have the leaks from the prosecution and it just is one-sided, I think that they'll ask for a gag order. That doesn't mean Bonaventure will get it. He'll give it. But I also asked a question yesterday. I was a juror on a case a couple of months ago. I was only in there for one day, but I was.
Yeah, I remember about the television story.
Right, and the TVs were on news. And so I asked the public information officer yesterday, what are you going to do about the TVs? He said, well, he blocked Las Vegas One that's airing it gavel to gavel. And I said, yeah, but what about, they can change the channel any time. What about the teasers on the coverage that day that air all day long and the noon session and the 4 p.m. and 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. newscasts on four channels in Las Vegas? And he said, huh, I haven't thought of that. So he's going to block all the local TV stations and CNN. I mean, that to me is unbelievable, that you can go into a jury room, the lounge area where they'll be when, you know, they're not in session, or if there's a, you know, when the jury's not supposed to be present during a conference, you know, with the judge and the attorneys, they go back to that room.
It came up yesterday in court, I think, Sandy Murphy's lawyer said $100,000 had been paid to eight witnesses.
Yeah, that
by the prosecution.
The prosecution, it came out at the hearing before last that the prosecution apparently did have something to do with that. They're denying it, but the witness statements say differently, and that money came from the estate, But the police also apparently had something to do with it, you know, as they so into who got what. And, of course, Dillard had input into who got what, and Dillard was the lead.
Right, Tom Dillard. And he did not behave very well at the last hearing, if I remember correctly.
No, he stormed
off. Was he around this time?
No, he was only there last time because he had to testify. But he sat next to me, actually, you know, when he was waiting to go up and speak to testify, and he was very fidgety. Very fidgety, and obviously not happy with the way it went. You know, Sarah is a very good attorney and kind of called him down a little, got him to admit a few things. But, you know, the fact that, and in fact, Dillard had sat up on the stand under oath and said that his recommendations for the rewards weren't followed. Well, that's not true, because the maid, next door maid or Ted's maid, whichever one it was, he had recommended that she get money, and she did in fact get money. So what he said that like three or four times, it wasn't followed, and it was. I mean, I checked the records, I checked the list of people that were given, who were given money, and she was on it. So he under oath said they weren't followed, and that wasn't true. So I think you're seeing a whole different ball game. You're not seeing, and you're going to see defense attorneys who don't look tired and are, you know, here to save their clients and not roll over. Louis Palazzo stopped trying. I mean, it was, you know, you could almost see that.
Yeah, you talked about that before with me.
And that's going to change.
Talking about the case before David Roger, who's now the DA, handled it. This time he got this Christopher Lawley. Is that right? Is that how you pronounce his name?
Lawley and Backus.
Yeah. What kind of lawyers are they?
They're young. They're prosecutors. The one, Lawley, is, he's got a very big presence. He says things, and then Tony Farrell will stand up and say that what he just told you is just a pack of lies. He said things that aren't true. I mean, I think that prosecutors ought to be held accountable, that they can't just stand up and say things that aren't true. And every time they do that, Sarah's going to stand up and hold them to it. So I think you're going to see less of that. That seems to be the tactic from the prosecutor's office, to throw everything, you know, from the kitchen sink onto the wall and see what sticks. But he's going to hold them accountable, and they can only bring up things that are actual, you know, facts.
And last time, the attorneys for the defense really didn't object all that much, a lot of times, when I thought they should have.
The maid sitting there, nobody stood up and objected to so many things. And this time, which brought up some issues on appellate, had someone, one of the defense attorneys, objected to some things on the silver counts that Rick was convicted on. They could have won at Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said that when they rendered their ruling on, you know, on the convictions, that if someone had objected, this would be an appellate issue, but it's not, because they didn't.
Yeah, we discussed that several times, that you know, you got to get it in there so you can object to it.
Well, these guys are doing it. I mean, I could see throughout all these hearings, there's been, you know, four or five, six hearings, and, you know, preliminary hearings, and I could see that a lot of the things that the defense attorneys were doing, they were laying the ground for another appeal in case they're convicted. So I'd be surprised if they're convicted, though, but it'll be interesting to see how the trial goes, because I think a lot of the evidence, you know, that they have, the defense is going to be able to explain and explain it away or give an explanation for it. Plus, they're going to, you know,
It appears to me that it's kind of strange the prosecution didn't settle for some kind of, or did they offer a plea bargain or something on the second trial?
They offered there was a plea bargain offered for the first trial.
How about time served?
But they're not going to take a plea bargain on something they didn't.
Okay, they want to prove their innocence completely.
They're not guilty. They didn't convict. They didn't commit murder. He died of a self-inflicted drug overdose, and we're not going to plead out to something we didn't do. The stance, they won't even talk about it.
Binion's is closed now, right?
No, Binion's was taken over by Harris. It's doing very well.
Okay, but
same employees. They kept the employees.
Okay.
Brought it back, and Binion's, it's no longer owned by the Binion family. It wasn't anyway. It was owned by Becky, you know.
Sure. Well, my point was, I wonder if this is going to make any difference since that family's really out of the picture now.
Well, Becky has come out of the woodwork a little bit, but it's hard to say in what way. She's watching. You don't see Dillard working behind the scenes at all for any police stuff they might be doing. I would imagine it's the police department doing it, unless they've hired other private eyes, but Dillard, because he's sort of become a part of the case, is out of it.
But Becky and her husband are no longer in the casino business in Nevada.
Well, they are, but out of town. I think he is out of town.
Okay.
No, not here in town, and they never will be. You know, they had that thing. I mean, they shut it down.
I know. They had all kinds of problems. At one time, the employees didn't even get it.
Well, they don't pay bills, and they don't pay insurance policies, and it looked like they were, you know, sort of skimming from it. Who knows? But it looks like, you know, they weren't paying their bills, so who knows what they were doing with the money. But
now Jack, I guess, still lives in Las Vegas, but he doesn't have any operations there either, huh?
No, he's
down in Mississippi and up there in Illinois.
Yeah, Binion's in Mississippi, which apparently it does very well.
Yeah,
and then his tournaments are televised, and
right.
He still goes by the Binion, you know, horseshoe name, and they do very well. Who knows if he'll come back into town? You know, he and Ted were a good team. And they ran the casino together. You know, he was the operating manager, and Ted ran the casino.
Right. I remember those days.
Yeah.
But I
it'd be a whole different. It should be a whole different feel. I just think it's going to be more fair this time. Last time, you could just see the tide change, and almost the defense attorneys give up. It was unbelievable. You know, at one point I heard that one of the defense attorneys, you know, a member of the team, let's say, when asked, you know, before they presented their side of the case, well, we don't really have a side because there's nothing to present because their side is so ridiculous. Well, of course you present your case. Of course, you know, and that's one reason they lost. So it clearly was a one-sided case, as you observed.
I wonder how that happens, that Sandy and Rick would choose attorneys which turned out to be inept.
Oh, how do you know? I mean, how do you know? Nobody's an expert on getting an attorney.
Yeah, I understand.
The second time around. I mean, how do you know you trust an attorney? In this town, you can hire an attorney, and it's awful to say, and I'm not saying these guys were like that, but you can hire an attorney, and they'll work for both sides of the fence.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty common knowledge off the record.
You can't trust them, and so, I mean...
And Las Vegas is not the only place, unfortunately. It's that way. It's a good old boy system.
It's good old boy here, big time. And how could they possibly know who's aligned to who? And you know, and that's why to be properly represented in this town, you've got to go out of state to get another attorney.
And then, of course, they have to come in.
He's in this town.
They have to come in and get somebody member of the Nevada Bar as a partner.
Right, and that's why they got who they got.
Yeah.
And I think that they, you know, although Michael Cristalli once worked for Bonaventure, which I don't think that's an advantage, and it certainly doesn't seem to be doing him any help, but that, to me, would be more problematic than it would be an advantage, but that was one reason they apparently went with Michael Cristalli.
Well, when they had DeGaron, he probably could overcome any obstacle like that through his experience.
You know, he got the hell out of Dodge is what he did. So, you know, DeGaron did. He bailed. But, and I think probably it's the accusation of witness tampering from the old defense to one. And yesterday in court, two people, Bill Fuller and then someone who works for him, not for the defense team, but for Bill Fuller, and Bill Fuller pays Sandy's defense bills, they have to testify at some point. studio with witness Catherine.
Kathy, I look forward to working with you as this trial comes along. I'll be out there and see you in person. We sit across the table from each other. Well, Kathy, we'll be talking to you again Monday. It'll be an interesting day in court as jury selection starts. And, of course, I guess the judge, Bonaventure, he'll rule on some of those motions that he hasn't addressed yet. Kathy Scott is our guest from Las Vegas. She's the author of Death in the Desert, the Ted Binion homicide case, as well as a stringer for the New York Times and a columnist for the Las Vegas City Life. She's also a college professor. Thanks, Kathy. We'll talk to you later.